I'm Kurt Anderson in Studio 360, and I'm talking today with Blythe Corbett. She's an assistant professor of psychiatry at the University of California and an expert on autism.
Sounds can be too loud, so how can you have a group of kids singing? And I want to have a musical. I want to have like a, you know, all-out musical.
Blythe, just this past week, a documentary premiered on HBO called Autism the Musical. It's about a woman named Elaine Hall, who's a single mother of a severely autistic boy in Los Angeles. And she decides that she's going to start a theater program for him and other kids suffering from disorders across the autistic spectrum.
In the beginning, I had traditional therapists working with him. They thought sometimes I was a crazy lady because he wasn't doing appropriate things. I started bringing in theater people who had no problem with things out of the ordinary. And if Neil needed to do crazy things, they would be crazy with him and with big affect, and they would join his world until he emerged into our world. When I was ready to go back into the workforce, I didn't know what to do. And the answer came to me really strong: teach children with special needs acting and movement.
That's from a new documentary on HBO called Autism the Musical. Now, we've heard lots of talk about an epidemic in the incidence of autism, and the Center for Disease Control last year released this statistic that one in 150 kids in the United States has autism. Do you have a basic hunch, as a in sort of wearing your public health hat, that mm-hmm. this is something to worry about a lot in terms of being a crisis?
For one, speaking in the trenches and working with individuals with autism, I would not say that it's a crisis in terms of people needing to, for example, stop vaccinating their children or take great risks like that.
For fear that vaccinations cause autism, which some people believe.
Correct. Yeah. In terms of vaccines, there's plenty of information to show us that vaccines are extremely important. And for children who are not vaccinated, we do know the consequences of that if they get one of these horrific childhood diseases. What remains controversial is perhaps isolated incidences, for example, the Hannah Pauling case that recently came out, and you know, the scientific and autism community is wrestling with this case study, and I think the operative word here is case. We don't know at this point, we don't have the data to be able to generalize it to the larger group of autism, but what it does provide to us is clues, perhaps, into not maybe causal, but potentially contributory factors in disease processes, not just autism. So I think what has created so much tension within the different communities of science and autism and so on, the health field in general, is the idea of the word causal. I don't think we're anywhere near being able to say that about just about anything in
right.
autism, but especially when we're getting to something like vaccines, where there's been plenty of studies to show that, at least in the broader cases, this does not seem to be a primary causal factor.
There is this thing called the neurodiversity movement, in which mm-hmm. adults are saying that this is just a difference, not something that should be stigmatized or even cured. Mm-hmm. Let's listen to a clip from such an autistic adult, Amanda Baggs. She has made a video that is not Amanda Baggs speaking, but rather she's typing and her speech is being synthesized, that has had about 500,000 views on YouTube so far. And here's a bit of that.
The previous part of this video was in my native language. Many people have assumed that when I talk about this being my language, that means that each part of the video must have a particular symbolic message within it, designed for the human mind to interpret. But my language is not about designing words or even visual symbols for people to interpret. It is about being in a constant conversation with every aspect of my environment, connecting physically to all parts of my surroundings. in this part of the video, the water doesn't symbolize anything. I am just interacting with the water as the water interacts with me.
That is Amanda Bags on her video typing on a speech synthesizer, and that's the voice you hear. You can see the video at our website, studio360.org. Blythe, what do you think of her and of that general notion that we shouldn't consider these people disordered and dysfunctional, but rather different?
Yeah, I think it's a remarkable video and allows us to, you know, she's gotten to a place in her life where she is not only accepting of her condition, but is, you know, confident in her ability to communicate and interact in the world. And so I think it's fair to be able to say that she is an individual in her own right and being able to operate, you know, and interact as she chooses to with the world. That's where the rub is when, you know, the struggle to be able to belong and yet one doesn't. It sounds like Amanda Bags, from her own interpretation, has a sense of, you know, resolve and comfort in who she is.
Yes, and draws strength from being this kind of in-your-face activist on her behalf.
Right.
I mean, and we should make clear that there are many autistic adults, maybe most of them, who want to fit in better. The writer, Jonathan Mitchell, sort of brooks no quarter with this idea. He would like to be cured. And I'm sure that's not uncommon.
No, and in fact, one of the significant contributory factors for adults as they get older is tremendous anxiety and depression. And we believe, anyway, and especially from talking to some of these individuals, it's one of the results is recognizing that they're different and that they don't belong, and yet they want to. And so I think that for those individuals, I don't know how much they would grasp this idea of neurodiversity when they want to feel a sense of belonging in their community and with others.
What about this? The general connection between autism and expressions of creativity? The Mind Institute, where you work, has a book called Art of the Mind, which is a collection of visual art by patients, by autistics. Are there general patterns for the kinds of work that autistic people do when they are being creative?
Yeah, so there tend to be certain areas where if an individual with autism tends to have the savant or exceptional abilities, especially in art, in visual, spatial kind of skills, being able to create sometimes with fine, minute detail. Another woman that I know is a master at Rubik's Cubes and, in fact, had her own business for a while, taking all kinds of different shapes and creating her own types of Rubik's Cubes.
Does that then lead us to understand the nature of autism in some new way, that autistic people tend to excel in those realms?
Well, I think they do. One of the things that they have tremendous focus and expertise in a particular, you know, given area. And perhaps, and one, some theories that are out there suggest that to the sacrifice of others. So they might have these highly developed abilities, say, again, in drawing or whatever, and that part of their brain might be highly developed, but another part, maybe their language area, whatever, is underdeveloped and is not being able to process information in sort of this holistic way.
Now, in the collection of artwork from the Mind Institute that I looked at, there's some very skillful work. Is there one painting in either your collection or in this Mind Institute book that is an especially good expression of an autistic's way of viewing the world?
Yeah, I think there's a couple. One in particular, Chris Murray, who is an artist best known, I think, for his detailed drawings of New York, which you would appreciate. And he draws, you know, every window by hand. And one of the unique things also about Chris's work is he will draw it, but if he hasn't finished it and he's gotten to the edge of the paper, he will then just grab another piece of paper and just attach it and continue his drawing from there. So even in his way of his particular approach to his art, is also unique.
Yeah, and the painting of his that you have in the book is a picture of the Plaza Hotel in New York. And
right.
he's attempted to draw every stone in the building.
Yes. Yes, and probably has.
Yeah. I mean, and one looks at that and it's a nice picture, but the guy is 47. There is a there's a true childlike quality to this depiction.
Absolutely.
Is that common?
Yes. I think that's pretty common. And also some unique things that I have seen, I can't, of course, say in all, but many who choose to draw human figures in their artwork, many times there is sort of an absence or limited facial expression in the characters. And perhaps you might have noticed some of that in the Art of the Mind book as well.
Uh-huh. Blythe Corbett is my guest today.